Good morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Jerry Klein. Thanks for joining us. Today in the program, we get a chance to visit with Bishop Donald DeGroote, certainly about the coronavirus situation and what's going on in the Diocese of Sioux Falls, but a little bit more, too, about who he is and who he wants to be as our bishop. Hope you'll stick around for that. Renee Kranz will have news for us in just a bit. First, the readings, though, for this Lenten Sunday. Michelle Sletten with the first and second reading. Father Joseph Schulten with the Gospel.
A reading from the first book of Samuel. The Lord said to Samuel, "Fill your horn with oil and be on your way. I am sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem, for I have chosen my king from among his sons." As Jesse and his sons came to the sacrifice, Samuel looked at Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed is here before him." But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not judge from his appearance or from his lofty stature, because I have rejected him. Not as man sees does God see, because man sees the appearance, but the Lord looks into the heart." In the same way, Jesse presented seven sons before Samuel. But Samuel said to Jesse, "The Lord has not chosen any one of these." Then Samuel asked Jesse, "Are these all the sons you have?" Jesse replied, "There is still the youngest who is tending the sheep." Samuel said to Jesse, "Send for him. We will not begin the sacrificial banquet until he arrives here." Jesse sent and had the young man brought to them. He was ruddy, a youth handsome to behold, and making a splendid appearance. The Lord said, "There, anoint him, for this is the one." Then Samuel, with the horn of oil in his hand, anointed David in the presence of his brothers. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David. The word of the Lord. A reading from the letter of St. Paul to the Ephesians. Brothers and sisters, you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Live as children of light, for light produces every kind of goodness and righteousness and truth. Try to learn what is pleasing to the Lord. Take no part in the fruitless works of darkness. Rather, expose them, for it is shameful even to mention the things done by them in secret. But everything exposed by the light becomes visible. For everything that becomes visible is light. Therefore it says, "Awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light." The word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. As Jesus passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. He spat on the ground and made clay with the saliva, and smeared the clay on his eyes, and said to him, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. So he went and washed and came back able to see. His neighbors and those who had seen him earlier as a beggar said, "Isn't this the one who used to sit and beg?" Some said, "It is," but others said, "No, he just looks like him." He said, "I am." They brought the one who was once blind to the Pharisees. Now Jesus had made clay and opened his eyes on the Sabbath. So then the Pharisees also asked him how he was able to see. He said to them, "He put clay on my eyes, and I washed, and now I can see." So some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God because he does not keep the Sabbath." But others said, "How can a sinful man do such signs?" And there was a division among them. So they said to the blind man again, "What do you have to say about him since he opened your eyes?" He said, "He is a prophet." They answered and said to him, "You were born totally in sin, and are you trying to teach us?" Then they threw him out. When Jesus heard that they had thrown him out, he found him and said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" He answered and said, "Who is he, sir, that I may believe in him?" Jesus said to him, "You have seen him, and the one speaking with you is he." He said, "I do believe, Lord," and he worshiped him. The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with a look at news highlights from this past week from the Bishop's Bulletin, here's Renee Kranz.
Mercy, which is at the heart of the Christian life, is not a one-dimensional virtue, but instead is the acceptance of God's love and the giving of that love to others, Pope Francis said. There is no Christianity without mercy, the Pope said March 18th during a live broadcast of his weekly general audience from the Library of the Apostolic Palace. If our Christianity does not lead us to mercy, we have taken the wrong path, because mercy is the only true goal of every spiritual journey. It is one of the most beautiful fruits of charity, he said. Catholic Relief Services received a vote of confidence from the Executive Committee of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops following allegations that educational materials and web pages produced by the agency's partners in Africa included practices that are contrary to church teaching. The humanitarian relief efforts of CRS are grounded in the loving teachings of the Catholic Church. CRS stands in firm defense of life. Criticisms to the contrary should not detract from the powerful impact your donations have on the lives of otherwise forgotten suffering populations, committee members said in a statement released March 17th. The State Department issued its annual country reports on human rights March 11th, highlighting abuses in China, Myanmar, Vietnam, and other nations during a press briefing that day. China is spreading features of its authoritarian system to the world, such as restrictions on civil society and freedom of expression. With all the non-COVID news a Catholic can use, this is Renee Kranz with the Bishop's Bulletin.
It's nice to have a little break from the yes, COVID news, yes. Renee. Thanks for that. Let's move on to our interview with Bishop DeGroote. This morning on Catholic Views, we are joined by our new bishop, Bishop Donald DeGroote. A pleasure, Bishop, to have you with us on Catholic Views program. We had a chance to visit with you once before you were installed, but a great moment, I think, to have you back.
Thank you. You know, it's been a real privilege. Certainly lots going on right now, but God's been very generous with grace, and it's been a great, great, great delight for me to get to know the people, to be in the rural area again, which speaks to my heart and my growing up. So I feel very, very blessed, both with God's grace directly and the wonderful people that have been so kind in reaching out to me.
You alluded in a conversation that you had with some of us around the building earlier that you thought maybe you had a plan for how your first month or two as a new bishop would go. I suspect that dealing with the coronavirus was not among the things that was on that list.
Amen to that. You know, there's that great saying, make your plans and watch God laugh. Yeah. I think God had a great laugh for me with me. So certainly coronavirus. I had some of my own struggle with influenza A, a little pneumonia, and that was kind of knocked me out. So God's plan were much better than mine, although I missed the opportunities to meet some of the people and get out into some of the areas that I'd hoped to. But just means God has another time for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think your point is one that we probably should expand on a little bit, and that is that we don't always understand what the Lord is about. And we're certainly not saying that anything related to the coronavirus is planned by God. But he allows it in the sense that it's here. And then it's up to us maybe how we respond. Is that right?
That's exactly it, yeah. So sometimes it's spoken of as permissive will. So God permits all kinds of things. For example, we're so very blessed to be created in his image and likeness. And part of that is we're blessed with a free will. And so there's lots of decisions that can be made that, you know, can harm other people. Mm-hmm. And yet God, in his permissive will, allows that because he doesn't want to violate the gift he gave us in free will. But there's other things like the coronavirus, which he is permitting. And certainly we can experience, if we reflect on it and pray into it and we let God enlighten us, that even in the most difficult things of life, God can bring great things out of it. And I think that's the disposition we need to have, especially with the coronavirus right now. With all the uncertainty, the completely understandable fears that we would have and wondering what's going to happen, I think here's a time for us to just draw closer to the Lord. And I certainly found that in the time, even with my illness. But now that I'm recuperating again, I've learned a lot from that lesson.
Yeah. It's Lent, isn't it? I mean, it's a Lent in a different way than maybe any of us have ever experienced, but it's Lent.
It is Lent. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know, part of Lent, we remember Jesus' example going into the desert. And going into the desert is a place of isolation, meaning alone, things are very different. You didn't have the conveniences. We're certainly invited typically through prayer, fasting, and almsgivings. And of course, there's different ways that can be done. We might think of it as, in a certain way, there's a fasting right now that's happening, especially in light of, the decision I made after getting advice and insight, looking at the data that was made available, and really praying about what do we do so that we can try to limit as much as possible the spread of the coronavirus in our area and protect the vulnerable, especially, which has really been on my heart. So that's going to require certain fasting. It's a fasting for us who so love the Mass and desire to be at Mass. And so I had to prayerfully discern that. And through prudential judgment and through prayer, the Lord confirmed that I need to be especially attentive right now to the vulnerable and the potential of harm to them, which means sacrifice for the rest of us. And so even though we can't receive the Lord physically in Holy Communion, for example, at Sunday Mass, or gather as a community in the same way, my hope is that through this time of, if you will, fasting in that regard, we can find other ways to reach out, be connected with parishioners, and still be able to receive the grace that God wants to give us. And we can get that through what's called spiritual communion. And in a little announcement I sent out, and there was a little on the website, a little explanation of what that is. And we're going to actually do even more this weekend at the televised station Mass. And it will be a little teaching on what is spiritual communion. How do we do that? So in this time of fasting, hopefully that'll be a resource to help all of us, especially those who aren't able to physically receive the Holy Eucharist, to be present with the communities that we have been so connected with.
You mentioned the fast evolution of this, kind of the fluidity of the situation. We're recording this midweek. People won't hear it until Sunday or Monday, this program. We don't quite know where we'll be Sunday or Monday. But in a sense, that's part of this mystery, isn't it? And isn't that always true with our faith life? We don't quite know where we're going to be even in a few days.
Jerry, you said it so well. You know, I suspect any of us, as we reflect back on our lives, can see the many surprises that God brought into our lives, some great surprises and some very challenging surprises. And I think for me, it's a reminder, and hopefully maybe for all of us, that God has this thing. He's in charge. He's got a much bigger plan we can't see. But the key is we trust Him. We turn to Him. We let Him be our rock, our strength, especially in the times of trial, uncertainty, struggle. The time of Lent, when we're tested, we're tempted, if you will, like Jesus was, do like Jesus did. He had communion with the Father.
Mm-hmm.
And that communion with the Father enabled him to stay rooted and then to make the right choices in persevering through those trials.
You know, we are people who gather around the Eucharist. I mean, that's who we are as Catholics. It's central. It's the source and summit. We talk about that all the time, don't we?
Yes, yes.
And so I know you don't take this decision lightly. I know you understand when people push back and say, but, shouldn't we be praying even more? That's not an easy thing to explain, is it?
No, it's not an easy thing to explain. It's not an easy decision to make. But I can tell you in the feedback that I've gotten, I've had people communicating with me on both sides of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Some who are so very grateful that I didn't cancel Mass last week, that express concerns about the potential of that, that won't be happy with the decision that I have made. But I can also assure you there's others on the whole other side of it that are so grateful that I'm doing this. And certainly from the healthcare, as I've consulted with them, they're strongly advising that we move this direction for, again, the broader well-being of the community. And I think that's one of the things as Catholics we always have to remember, you know. To be one means we need to seek what's ultimately for the common good. And sometimes that means sacrifice and hard sacrifices. And this is one of those times.
Yeah. Common good. It's a phrase we hear a lot of times. Maybe sometimes we don't really understand what it means. I don't think it's actually named as a virtue, but in a sense, there's virtue in acknowledging the common good. It's not about me. It's about all of us.
It's a great point, Jerry. You're right. It's not about all of us. And seeking the, different people have different opinions of what the common good is. And that's where part of the challenge is, not only in, say, the church world, but also in business or the political world or any of those. To seek the common good is really listening to the Lord and listening to His plan so that we can see in a spiritual way what we're not able to see in a human way.
Mm.
And that's what helps us establish really what the common good is. So we're living in accord with God's plan. And sometimes that means great suffering and great trials, great fasting, like we will be experiencing as the faithful right now, as they long to be back in their communities as a group, and certainly to be able to celebrate the Mass as a group. But for the common good, because God can give us and does give us grace in other ways, and that's part of the common good.
One of the things I think about is, and we again, something we talk about, but maybe we don't quite have it made real for us all the time, is our participation in the universal church. We are part of the universal church. We don't think about this, but a lot of places of the world do not have access to the Mass on a regular basis. And now here we are, perhaps in a new way, understanding what people, our brothers and sisters around the world, experience all the time.
That's a great point. And you can even see it even within our own diocese, that maybe parishes who used to have more Masses, mm-hmm. and they've had to cut back on Masses for either low attendance or not availability of enough priests, as an example. But you make a great point. I think of some of the missionary countries, Venezuela, for example, where there's great trials going on many levels, and very few priests for lots of people, and they don't get Mass regularly. We think of our dear military folks, mm-hmm. Especially those where there's not chaplains or there's availability for regular Mass. They make extraordinary sacrifices. So that's a very good point you're making, Jerry.
Yeah. And even if we look back, 125, 130 years ago in South Dakota, we didn't have very many priests. And most of them were itinerants who got around as best they could to the places that had Catholic populations. Places went a long time in between Masses from time to time.
It's a good point. Helpful piece of history for me to understand as well.
Yeah, yeah. So we're not unique, I guess. And a lot of times we think we are, or that our situation is just, the worst it's ever been. It's probably not true.
Well, like my mother used to say, you don't have to look very far to see that somebody else has it worse than us. So whether it's historically or whatever it might be. So it's a good point. It's a good reminder.
Again, kind of where we started this morning, I don't suspect you had any notion that the kind of decisions you've had to make in the last few weeks, they weren't anywhere on your radar, were they?
Certainly not this one. There was other ones that I was kind of expecting, knowing that, there's need for direction and, there's different things with projects or things that maybe there's been questions about and I need to get downloaded and eventually, gather data and pray and discern. But you're absolutely right. This one was not on my radar at all. Obviously we've dealt with influenza as we do a lot of winters. So this kind of think, well, maybe this is just like another one, but obviously this is of a different category because the not having a cure for it right now and vaccines and all of that, or at least through the process of trying to find something, as last I heard. So it is a different category. It is unprecedented, at least certainly in my lifetime, of this nature. So it does require more extraordinary measures and response, but certainly unexpected.
You talked a little bit about the spiritual communion, and there are a whole host of resources that are available on the diocesan website, including the video that you did trying to help people understand your decision about all this. All of those things I hope will help people, and we're going to keep updating those, right?
Yeah, the goal would be to continue to provide some ongoing education of how to deal with these times. So maybe it's, how do we deal with fear and the uncertainties of, or maybe our mother in the nursing home or fear of catching it ourselves, mm-hmm. right? And the effects it would have on us, and would there be sufficient resources in the medical field if this thing continues to escalate? So even economically, and all the impact of jobs and financial things, there's lots and lots of uncertainties that come. We do hope to provide resources both to the parishes to assist the pastors and the staffs, but also the good faithful through our own website to help with just processing things and how do we deal with it, and hopefully there'll be resources that will be meaningful and supportive for people in this time.
Yeah. So stay tuned to all of this. We don't know really what's to come, and I guess we have to wait and let the Lord reveal it to us as we go.
Yeah, and I think too what it certainly invites me to and calls all of us to is a deep surrender to what we cannot change. I love that beautiful serenity prayer, especially that one part of it, right? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, mm-hmm. the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And when we can surrender it all over to God, that's when we find our great interior peace. And God's got this one.
Yeah, yeah, amen. A couple of points of clarification before we maybe move on to a couple other things today. Church buildings can remain open. so that if people can continue to pray if they choose to go?
Yeah, so what we've done is I've informed the pastors of the parishes that they should feel free to continue to have their facility open as far as church space, adoration chapel, those kinds of things. But it is their discretion. There might be some good reasons why a pastor would choose not to, and so they want to honor that. But yes, people can not only can come, but are encouraged to come on their own and just keep the, you know, social distancing and all the things that we can all stay healthy and reduce the risk of it spreading.
And then same would be true with adoration chapels.
Adoration chapels, yep, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So opportunities are there if it makes sense for you. If you're not well, don't go out.
Yeah.
That's kind of the bottom line, isn't it?
That's exactly it. And you know, the Lord keeps teaching me in times when I've longed to pray before the Blessed Sacrament, for example, and I didn't have that availability, is that the Lord is everywhere. And so, especially if we're concerned to getting out, and especially those who are vulnerable, the advice from the health officials certainly is to not take risks. But there's many ways to pray, even at home: rosaries, devotions, meditation, scripture.
Yeah.
And so just to draw close to the Lord in that time with families or individually.
And we may find ourselves in a kind of restless or kind of even anxious about, you know, I should be at Mass, or I should be, but to your point, there's other ways.
Yeah. And I think, you know, really to honor and to respect that, because it's a beautiful thing, that sense of, hey, I should be at Mass, because the Lord has placed that within us, because that helps rightly order our lives and keeps us in union with Him and enables us as a community to give glory and honor to God. So He's designed it to be that way in ordinary circumstances. The issue is we have extraordinary circumstances, yeah, right now. And so God's allowing us even to feel that awkwardness.
So let's take a little bit of a hiatus from,
sure,
from talking about coronavirus and just broaden this just a little bit, because we still haven't, you haven't had a lot of chance to be out and about in the diocese. Some, as you mentioned, some of it got cut short. People are still learning who you are. It's a heck of a way to introduce yourself through all of this stuff. But what are you finding in kind of broad strokes? What are you finding with what you've experienced so far?
Finding a lot of goodness, even in the confirmations that I was able to do before all of this happened. And of course, confirmations are being put on hold. We'll have to reschedule those. But I'm finding a lot of goodness, wholesomeness in the people that I, especially as I get out to interact with people. People have been extremely warm and welcoming, very helpful. There's great insights that have been offered already by chancery staff and seeing the good things that are already in place. So I see it as a place that's a diocese that's been very blessed in many ways for a good period of time, and lots of good things in place, but also lots of opportunities. We will have challenges. We know the rural areas, the populations certainly are declining there, and certainly the flooding and the farm economy. There's a lot of particular challenges that will need to be faced, and I'm working with staff already to start praying and brainstorming how we can especially be of support in those more rural areas and the areas of greater need, even social service type needs, mm-hmm, to care for those who are most vulnerable and most in need now.
Yeah. And I don't think anybody expects in your first month you've got it figured out.
I don't. And if I do, then I better go back to prayer, because only God's got it all figured out.
Yeah. It takes a little time. I remember Bishop Swain saying, and for him, of course, the move was very different, because he came from an area with had a million trees all around it all the time, and he came to this place that was so wide open. You actually grew up in a land not so different from the way the South Dakota geography is, at least this side of the river.
Absolutely.
So, growing a little up, more familiar.
Growing up in Minnesota with 10,000 lakes, and the farm that I grew up on actually overlooked the lake, and having a little cabin in northern Minnesota, we're on a lake, off of a lake. Yeah, I certainly missed that, but I had a wonderful delight last night. I was out for a little walk from the bishop's house and stumbled upon a little walking area, the Japanese garden area.
Around Koval Lake, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And that was just a wonderful delight. The ducks were there, and I had to take a picture and send it to my family. And so making some fun connections that, you know what, God's still providing for me with my love for the water and the lakes.
Yeah. And your family, they've kind of come to accept this, that they know it's real now?
I think they know it's very real. I think just going through the whole experience, they were overwhelmed with the how well things were planned in the ordination and the wonderful welcome and of course, amazing experience for all of us. And I think it's still adjustment time for them, and certainly is for me.
Yeah. And that's to be expected, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Nothing surprising about that. A couple minutes left, Bishop. What do you want to make sure people know, either about you personally as you lead this diocese, and maybe it's in light of what's going on right now, maybe it isn't. Maybe it's just the broader than that.
Yeah, I'd say that my own interior experience in this call was extremely clear. God called me to this, made it very clear. He wanted me to say yes, He'd provide everything I need. So even through the coronavirus and all of that, I've had a deep sense of God's presence and His guidance, a deep sense of peace, even in the midst of big, you know, hard, challenging decisions and all the effects that that would bring. But also, there's a lot of delight in my heart of being right where the Lord wants me. Mm. And all the goodness I'm experiencing here, there's a certain excitement in my heart as well that God has blessed me with such a great diocese of being in a rural area, as I've shared. So much goodness, wholesomeness, so many good things already in place, but also a place that I think has great opportunities because of that and the openness and disposition of the people that I've experienced. And even working with the clergy, for example, and you know, the parishioners that I've met through my regional visits. So I'm personally in a really good spot, spiritually, emotionally, if you will, but even in this role.
And the word, I don't know why, the word evangelization just popped into my head. And it seems to me that's, even through the midst of the virus, that's just got to be who we are as church, doesn't it?
You know, the Holy Father was very clear, as was the nuncio at my Mass, that we are to be missionary disciples, and that part of my task was to assist with that in this particular diocese. Mm-hmm. So that basically means really not only coming to know and enter more deeply into my faith, but then sharing it. So in every context that we have, in our workplace, our families, our friends, our neighborhoods, really trying to help people experience the power of God, the gift of God, and through that, of course, extraordinary things happen. So absolutely on that.
Bishop Donald DeGrude, the bishop, the ninth bishop of the Diocese of Sioux Falls. Great to have you with us this morning on Catholic Views.
Thank you. It's been a privilege. God bless you.
So great to have Bishop DeGrude with us this morning. Just a reminder, as this continues to unfold over the next week or two or three or however long, keep tabs on the diocesan website, sfcatholic.org. We'll keep you as up to date as we can. That's our time for Catholic Views today. We'll be back next Sunday.